is after them, but it's Fahin who's barreling clear up the hill, and he is a machine. Fahin maintains his unbeaten record, and it's a treble for Willie Mullins and Ruby Walsh. Fahin's a champion. Artie Forrest.
Hello and a very warm welcome to Not the Cheltenham Countdown. Yes, it is the Cheltenham Review. Something of a last dance as we look back on what was an incredible 4 days of racing last week. Now, got the usual twosome in Ruby Walsh and Rory De Larga. We had them in this studio every week in the run-up to the festival. Plenty of winners given as well. If you are listening to this as a podcast, a reminder, it is available on the Paddy Power Racing YouTube channel. Loads of good stuff on that, and we'll continue to post plenty of stuff over the course of the summer. Right, first things first, lads. An incredible week, but Ruby, did you enjoy it?
I did enjoy it, yeah. There was so much to enjoy about it. I thought it was a great week for horse racing. I thought it was bookended the right way. Constitution Hill and Gallop and the Champ, and a lot of great stories in the middle as well, PK. I thought, for the sport of horse racing, I thought it was brilliant. That's funny, sitting down this morning, when you look at some of the results again and look at some of the SPs, you kind of wonder what was going on half the winter. You know, like, even looking at St. Roy returning 11s, he was 7-1 the day before. You wonder, like, no, no bet. Is it the way forward?
Well,
I'm not sure.
Rory, we have an entire show based on anti-post punting. So what is it about those on-the-day markets? They get so, is it volatile or strength or what is it?
Yeah, listen, I wouldn't want to be forming an anti-post market for all these races. And they have to be there to advertise the fact that, you know, it's a shop window. But at the same time, it's not easy for punters, not easy for bookmakers either when you've got horses liable to go for different targets. And you know perfectly well that on the day, it's incredibly competitive in the betting market, in the ring, on course, and with money liquidity piling up as well. It's the markets get a lot tighter. And by definition, if you're going to make something a 4-6 favourite for a championship race, then something that's been 4 or 5 or 6 to 1 is bound to drift in the market. Just to balance those books. And punters get better each-way value on the day than they do looking at the anti-post markets as a rule. If you can find something that you think is massively underrated, it's going to prove itself through the season, you're getting great value. But there's plenty of value, a huge amount of value to be had on the day. And some surprising prices about winners and losers. Look at the price that Shishkin went off in the Ryanair. I know he was beaten on the day. Gaird de Menil, we thought he'd be very short. He's ended up drifting again to a backable price during the day. That will always happen at Cheltenham. That's one of the great the great bonuses for punters.
I think you should always learn lessons. But to me, looking at it, I probably haven't watched sport or watched racing for so long from a non-punting point of view, is to remember the week after Cheltenham that wait till the day. If you fancy them each way at biggest prices. Like, I even look at Diverge, who ended up 25-1 in the Supreme. Like, he was 20-16s. All of a sudden, he was 9s. You're thinking, the each way value is gone. Then you look at what he returned. I never even thought of looking on the day. He went all the way back to 25s.
It does happen, yeah. There's strong markets. There's a lot of talk about attendances. You were both there. They were down, obviously, on the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Did you notice that, lads?
Definitely didn't know it. Obviously, it was sold out on Friday. Did I notice that? I thought Wednesday was quieter. I thought there was a great crowd on Tuesday and a great crowd on Thursday. But you're talking about down to what? Down to 50,000. That is a sellout at most Premier League venues. You're still talking a lot of people.
That's probably very comfortable. I don't know. I wasn't there.
If you want to have a look at Honeysuckle coming back in for the mayors, I don't want to get into the we'll get into the nitty gritty of that. But just looking at the crowds who lined every possible walkway and vantage point to see her, they didn't look a small crowd then. The crowd who were there seemed to be very engaged. It felt busy enough on Thursday to me. I mean, when I think about how busy it is, it's how difficult it is to get from the press room to the parade ring and back. Is how I measure that, and the quieter it is, the happier I am. But that's obviously
a grumbling hack making his way through the crowds.
Different measures for me and Ian Renton, it has to be said. So I was quite pleased with what it was like. It was very busy on Gold Cup day, obviously. I thought Tuesday and Wednesday seemed a little quieter, but it didn't strike me as being something that was a worry.
Yeah. Ian Renton said the crowds will come back. So whether it's up to close.
Yeah, I think the argument is that it was so good this year that all, you know, the stories that came out of it, the results that were there, the entertainment value that the festival gave means that more people are going to want to come next year. We'll see if that's what happens. I mean, they need to make adjustments to make it more attractive to people.
They do, yeah, there's no doubt about that. But it looks like if people didn't vote with their feet, they definitely voted with their eyes, which when you look at different viewing figures, streaming figures, etc. I think it probably showed the sport is in a popular position or an attractive position or whatever the right word is for it. But I'd say it's going the right direction. And I think Racing Inc. got the results it needed last week.
Yeah, big time.
Engagement was probably up.
Huge.
And it's not just about people who are there on course. And I think half the issue you have, or maybe even bigger than half the issue you have on track, is that Cheltenham has become a very difficult place to stay in. And people always like to stay locally and go racing. And that's, 3 or 4 years ago, you could stay locally and go. And now it costs an absolute fortune to stay in Cheltenham. And that's obviously putting a few people off. That's not the racecourse's fault, but it's something that someone needs to have some kind of creative thinking to sort out. There was this idea of having the shipping containers on. And that, listen, that's not a bad idea. It was just really badly presented and badly advertised. If you do something like that and just sell it differently next year, then that actually might work.
Glamping.
More trains in that train line into the train station at the race course. You could.
I'm going to glamp at next year's festival. Right, let's talk about the races themselves. We'll start with the Supreme Novice Hurdle. Marine National, the stat buster winning a Supreme, having not run since the Royal Bond. Rory, what did you make him?
I thought he was deserving winner in the day. I'm a little bit annoyed that I was against Facile Vega going into it. And I should have been on side with him. And the more I looked at him, I thought, not running since the Royal Bond has to be a big negative. It's only been, I think in the history of the Supreme, only one horse has been off for that long and won the race, and that was Captain CB. And you'd have struggled to back him on the day as well. And that just put me off him a little bit. But fair play to Barry Connell. He got it absolutely spot on. He's always believed in this horse. And even with that sort of unusual route through, he clearly has the horse to do it, thinks the world of him. And we obviously think Goodland is a very good horse as well. But if you sort of listen to him read between the lines, this is the real star. And he went through it like the best horse in the Supreme. He got a hugely confident ride from Michael O'Sullivan, who's born for the big day, clearly. And the pair of them were always in control of that race. He knew where he wanted to be. I know there was a suggestion that Facile Vega kicked on too soon, but when you consider that Facile Vega has looked a stare, I thought the way Paul Townend rode him seemed to be absolutely spot on. He'd have finished closer if he hadn't lost his back legs on landing over the last, but the right horse won the race and he was impressive. The question is, what plan do they make for him next season?
Well, before we get to next season, let's talk about this season. One assumes they're going to meet at Punchestown. I doubt either. Maybe one of them will go to Aintree, but I would have thought the two will go to Punchestown. Would you see the same result?
Yeah, it's interesting talking about Aintree because Aintree now is much closer to Punchestown than it normally would be. Longer gap between Cheltenham and Aintree, so it'll be attractive for the English horses, less attractive for the Irish. I don't see either of these doing Aintree. I think they'd probably both go to Punchestown. I can't see that Facile Vega would be better suited to Punchestown than Marine National, if anything, the other way around.
You look at the bumper last year, he was less impressive at Punchestown than he was Cheltenham, I suppose we look at that. Ruby, Facile Vega, you didn't want to oppose him, I think was your phrase on the podcast. What did you make of his run?
No, and I was fairly happy. I hadn't opposed him heading down the hill, to tell you the truth. But look, I think I agree with Rory. I think on the day, the best horse won. He was a very, very good horse. Looking at what else could happen this season, don't just believe because that's what Willie ran in the Supreme. That's what he would run in the 2 mile at Punchestown. He's often flopped him around. I won a Supreme in Vitour and a Ballymore in Faheen, and they ended up changing at Punchestown. It come at the day, it come at the hour for Willie. So, look, I wouldn't just be certain that it'll be Facile Vega that'll reoppose him at Punchestown. I imagine that's where both will go. But I thought Marine National was a very good winner and was the best horse on the day, without doubt.
Paul said he thought he hit the front too soon. Would you agree with that?
He's a beaten jockey. You're always going to think you should have, could have, would have, might have. Okay. And he's no different.
You mentioned Diverge ran a huge race as well.
He's huge. 25s by Frankel, drier ground, it suited him back at Punchestown too. So, look, I thought it was a good race, strong race. Only time will tell how great a race it was, but I did think we saw a very, very good winner.
Was there anywhere from Danny Mullins on Il Était Temps? Very disappointing.
He made a mistake at the fourth last and got running up the hill onto the bend. Can't make ground up there. He was disappointed.
Yeah, he wasn't great at the second hurdle, I think. So he got himself in a position that was a bit further back than he would have liked, and then he had to make his move in the wrong time in the race and the
after
wrong part
mistake,
of the track.
Yeah. Okay. And jumping does that to you in Cheltenham, puts you in the wrong place. If
he's got a limited upside though, doesn't he? Because he's a second season novice and he probably hit his peak last time out. He was a bit below it and he will do better, but there are horses in that race you'd have thought are now going to improve past him.
I thought the same.
All right, straw poll. The two of them, will they stay over hurdles next season, Ruby? I'd guess, obviously guess.
I hadn't thought about it. Fasa Viga has the physique of a chaser, I suppose. Marine National, will Barry Connell fancy a tilt at the champion hurdle? He might.
He might do.
What would you think?
It'd be nice if one of them tried to throw down the gauntlet. Well, we're assuming Constitution Hill's going to stay hurdling next season. Essentially, a lot depends on that. I think Michael Buckley wants to go chasing with Constitution Hill.
Does Nicky Henderson?
I very much doubt Nicky Henderson does, and I think Nicky Henderson probably wins that argument. And that will obviously change how other people view what they're going to do. It'd be nice to see Marine National thrown in there, you know, at least to have a new contender. He's not an obvious one for chasing on pedigree. He's got a flat pedigree, but he's a very athletic sort, and the fact that he's less substantial than Fasal Vega doesn't mean that he's not going to make a top class chaser. And he measured his hurdles really well there, so I think he'd make a chaser if he wanted to go that way. But he's also a very exciting hurdler, so we'll see what happens.
We will see. Right on to the Arkell, Ruby Walsh. Way back in, it could have been October at Leopardstown last year, we had a national season preview. You said your chaser to follow was El Fabiolo. Take a bow.
Yeah, I wish I hadn't doubted him a time since then. But look, he had the strongest form, the Irish Arkell form, going there, and he was a good winner. Dysart Dynamo, the race set up as we all thought. Didn't think John Bond jumped as well as he could.
No.
Thought he was careful, cautious, not sure he put his best foot forward. And El Fabiolo, if he ever manages to get his jumping sorted out. He made a few fair mistakes as well, even at the last fence. That was heart-stopping stuff, but he's just a very, very talented racehorse, PK.
Yeah, he looked very good. Sam Roy, you did put up as your each-way option. You thought the race might suit him, and he did get up. First, Dyson Dynamo, was he okay?
Yeah, he's perfect, yeah.
He's fine?
He's
okay.
Fine, yeah.
So Sam Roy, tricky horse to place, maybe?
2.5 at entry.
Okay.
Jump out to me. What would you think, Rory?
Yeah. That was the way we do stay further.
But John Bond will be in the mix as well.
John
same
yeah.
owner, so
yeah.
Which way did they go? But look, I thought he ran a really good race. And again, as you were saying, PK, he had come to me what wasn't a realistic each way price at 7-1. You were hoping he'd be 8 first 3/4 the odds, or maybe it was 50 the odds. But he got back out to 11-1. He was a great each way price.
Watch out for him at Aintree. As far as El Fabiolo's prospects are concerned, do you see him threatening the champion chase next season?
Oh, you'd have to think so.
Given the way they've been kind of beating each other, I suppose, this year, the open chasers over 2 miles.
Yeah, I mean, an argument was really impressive. Again, we're sort of skipping ahead back again. He was very impressive, and although you can sort of knock the form of the champion chase, he sets a decent standard, but of course he'll be 10 next year. So
yeah.
I certainly wouldn't be scared of going forward, because there's a generation of 2 mile chasers who are now on the downgrade. And, you know, there's a space for a changing of the guard.
Okay, we'll get to the champion chasers shortly. The champion hurdle, arguably the performance of the festival, the year, the season, ever. Discuss Constitution Hill, please, Ruby Walsh.
There's not a whole lot you can discuss. He's just spectacular.
That's one word for him. Aintree hurdle, possibly. Seems like they're keen on Aintree. And Rory already mentioned Aintree and Punchestown are a bit close. So us, we're hoping, we're praying he comes to Punchestown. But that would be a big 3 races in the space of 1.5 months.
Yeah, but horses in the past have done it. Histabrack probably most notable. It's 2 mile hurdle, and it's a big difference to 3 mile chasers to me. Mileage, yeah. The amount of jumps, etc., and the ease with which he's winning at PK. He's not having hard races. It was his 3rd win of the season. Has he been extended fully yet this year? Doesn't look like it to me.
He could have bombed 9 lengths. 9 lengths. Did I back him to him by 10? 9 lengths you won by.
You said the spread was 6.
The spread, but yeah, I wanted to lengthen my odds further. Lengthy, I'm greedy, Ruby Walsh.
That's the beauty of lengthening your odds.
I'm greedy.
I was doing a box in Cheltenham on Tuesday, and a lot of, I don't think there's any Irish people in it. So we got back down to the end of the card, and for a bit of fun, I said, look, there is a novelty bet here today, without a doubt. Say it's Constitution Hill +6 and Ireland +16 at the weekend.
Ooh.
15, was it?
Ooh, I think 14 they won by, yeah. Oh, nightmare. Back to the future for Constitution Hill, Ruby. A lot of races have been thrown out for next season, let alone Aintree, Punchestown. There is talk about chasing. Like, what would you do?
Me, he'd stay hurdling.
Yeah.
But I would be cautious. I would be thinking, you have the best in a pretty big division. I would be thinking of the future. But as I said, that would be me in a greedy sense looking at it. So look, whatever they decide to do, the best of luck to him. If he was mine, he'd be staying hurdling, but that's probably unambitious.
Probably. Does Michael Buckley, do you know Michael Buckley at all? Does he think about Don Run, or does he?
Oh, I think he does. Yeah. You know, and he's been in the game a long time. Of course, those with long memories will remember the first good horse. He's had horses since the 1970s. His colours used to be slightly different. Used to be black and white, quartered with a check cap, and now they're just white with a black cap. And he's had winners in all sorts of spheres. He's had horses placed in the Breeders' Cup. And clearly, you know, he wants to think about legacy and having a horse that will be remembered forever. He had a really good horse called The Proclamation many years ago with Nicky Henderson, who they thought could win everything. And sadly, he picked up what turned out to be a fatal injury in a novice chase at Ascot. He was the horse that everything else was measured by for years, and now Constitutional has come along and eclipsed that. I think he probably is thinking. He'd love to think Gold Cup down the line. And I think if they are thinking that, I think he'd like to, you know, be taking big jumps forward rather than going through, a boring novice season over fences.
They could, as a novice.
It'd be a waste of time spending a year in novice chases for him. Which is why I think this is not going to happen. I think Nicky Henderson will say, right, we know what we're good at, we'll do this. The one thing that really scares me is the whole flat talk. That just has to be drummed out of it.
I can't see
that.
That can't happen.
No, God.
Nicky Henderson doesn't mind running his good horses in big flat handicaps. And of course, and you know,
watered, not as grade one.
Did they not water Newcastle for him to run in the fighting fifth?
Yeah, well.
I think they did. If my memory serves me right, there was talk of watering Newcastle, and Newcastle had the water to get him for the fighting fifth. Can you really see him running on?
Good to firm at Royal Ascot.
And a good to firm at Royal Ascot compared to good to firm at Newcastle in November is like how they're both called good to firm. doesn't equate to
anything. Well, they could run him in the Northumberland plate, couldn't they? Give him a cup of
He could be the next Trushan.
No, I think I know people are talking about how good he is, but the thing about him is he absolutely loves to jump a hurdle. Now, you talk about that jump of the last and how it was real heart-in-the-mouth stuff and it harks back to previous episodes at that flight. He saw a stride.
Cheers, Rory.
Nico didn't see it. Well, Nico was being careful and thought, right, let's just go in and fiddle it. We've got the race won. He saw a stride and he took off. He didn't guess at it, I don't think. I think people will say he did guess. He saw a very long stride and he thought, I can do this.
Yeah.
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 You don't want them doing that.
No.
No, but...
he's a lick of paint.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was you know,
you
said
other side of that coin is the best hurdlers are on the edge.
Yes.
Istabrak fell twice. Greatest hurdler I ever saw. No. Hurricane Flying never fell, but he was the same. They are on the edge, and you do want them on the edge because they are the margins.
Yeah.
But I just hope that he always stays the lick of paint the right side of it. You'd hate to see him catching it and flip over.
I mean... probably will at some stage if he stays hurdling it. But like if it happened to Easterbrack, it'll probably happen to him at some stage. But
they're on the edge.
Yeah.
Okay. So but he stays over hurdles for Ruby. Rory, he takes in Royal Ascot. Northumberland Plate. And then he wins the Gold Cup there 6 months later.
Northumberland Plate, joking aside, I would just hate it if he's... And in fairness, they'd probably make more money if they could cherry pick what race he ran in on the flat. Maybe.
Yeah, but they have to give him a break, Ruby. They have to give him like these jumps horses need the summer off, right?
I haven't stood in front of Constitution Hill to look at him physically to see how heavy are his shoulders, how hard are his knees.
He's not heavy in the shoulders, that's very...
He moves that way. Yeah.
He's a very ordinary looking horse in the paddock.
He's a yogi.
He doesn't spend... No, he's not. He's fine, but he doesn't do anything to show off.
I probably spent more time looking at his mentality
in
Cheltenham, more so than his actual physique.
Yeah, he's an incredible horse in that, some horses turn it on and the head will come up and they look around and they're going to look at me, I'm a superstar, and he doesn't.
Yeah, we're very lucky to be around at this time.
But he does it on the track, it's true.
We have so much racing to go through. Producer Mark is staring at me at this stage, so we will move on. I do want to touch on the beaten horses state, man. Obviously, Ruby, you predicted the forecast, good man.
Take the credit. I got a new contract out of
that one. Take the credit. Even money you paid, or actually paid less, but it was available at evens. But he only beats Anne here by 4 lengths. Is that a concern, or is that where he is?
I think the way they were ridden. So you were wondering what will be ridden to take the third spot. To be fair to Paul Townend, he did get up behind Nico de Boinville. He was there to win. So that means you end up fading and the one that are trying to rob the third come on from the back. And Davy Russell did that on Zanahir. one road to win, the other road to achieve its best possible finishing position. And I would think Danaher actually achieved more than his best possible finishing position. So they're just two different rides, PJ, to achieve different things.
Okay.
Also, he wasn't at all Harden's day, man, when he was beaten either.
No.
Okay. Let's talk about, you would think that would be the highlight on any given Tuesday of a Cheltenham Festival. But then we had Honeysuckle and Rachel and Henry. Ruby, you were on TV, on ITV, and we spoke about this in the podcast afterwards. It's probably as emotional as I've seen you on TV.
Firstly, I was never glad to be wrong about a horse. I didn't think she would win. And I thought she was regressing and was coming down. So, but it was the result that I think everybody, or what appeared to be everybody in Cheltenham on Tuesday, wanted. So it was great to see her do it. It was great the manner in which she did it. I thought Johnny Burke was very good in Love Envoy. Rachel Blackmore then was covering him, but she kept lots of slow horses behind her.
Yes.
Slower mares behind her in a steadily run affair. So tactically, I thought she controlled it really, really well. Close enough to beat the mare in front, but she definitely scuppered a chance of those behind her. And then to watch what happened. I just thought it was a thing of beauty.
It really was. It's racing has been, like, we don't talk a huge amount about the industry stuff for good reason, I suppose, but that was just racing at its best, wasn't it, Rory?
It was, yeah. Listen, if you're going to knock it, the fact that Epitone and Maurice Roque didn't give their running on the day takes a wee bit of the gloss off it, but otherwise, the result was absolutely tremendous. It'd be great to see a montage of Rachel riding Honeysuckle at the festival, because her riding, the mare is amazing, but Rachel's riding of her has been absolutely perfect in those four wins. The one thing that annoyed me most about the festival was I was stuck in the press room having to write something up when she came back in, and I couldn't witness that at first hand, but that was just unbelievable. We talked about who will get the biggest reception at the festival. Betting without Honeysuckle. You're dead right to be betting without Honeysuckle, quite frankly.
That wasn't me. It was one of the questions. Yeah. We've got another question, actually, pretty good. That was brilliant. One of the best things I've ever seen. Henderson, you already touched on, is there worries about his yard?
Well,
apart from constitutional, or does that make his win even better because his other horse didn't seem to run?
Yeah,
well.
I mean, I wouldn't be, adding on £10 because some of his horses ran below form. He had several placed at the festival. Mr. Coffey was placed in the National Hunt Chase. And
Lucia
was only just out when she was fourth.
Fourth, yeah.
And I don't think she ran much below form, to be perfectly honest. Milgram was placed in the pretemps. So there are enough horses running well enough, but there were a few disappointments in there as well. The interesting thing for me was the fact that various of his horses were being strongly opposed in the market, as if someone thought they might not be 100% right. But you don't have to go back. You only have to go back a week or two to find out that Nicky's been getting winners. So it was a blank festival. Aside from Constitution Hill, I wouldn't draw too many conclusions. If you stopped the festival after the fourth race in the first day, I'd have been worried. But I think you can't be drawing conclusions on how a yard is doing based on a handful of runners at the most competitive meeting of the year.
It is, yeah, it is. Ruby, you love hypotheticals. Would Guy or Domeniel have won the National Chase had Mallard Mission stood up?
I only watched it the once, and I wasn't so sure, but lots of people were. So I will reserve judgment, PK, because I haven't watched it back.
Fair enough. Grand National, he's 10 to 1/3 favourites. Is he on there?
Guy Ardemania?
Yeah.
He's plenty of waiting, myself.
Yeah, but he's...
I wouldn't be sure he'll go there.
No?
No, and also, we know he stays 3 miles 6. Would he stay 4 1/4? It's not guaranteed that because you stay a marathon trip.
I think he's been given a well-judged ride to get the trip.
Yes. I agree with that. I had interesting arguments about that after the race.
Yeah,
I thought that was actually a very good ride. A lot of people said, "Oh, he got lucky there, didn't he?" And I thought he's nursed the horse through the race.
Yeah, I thought the same.
And made sure that he finished it, and that was really important. And that's the way. I mean, you see Patrick riding Cheltenham all the time, and that's the way he rides a lot of those races, knowing that they may go off too hard. If they're going too fast for you, there's no point in you bursting yourself to get close to them with two fences to jump. You've got to keep nursing them through and make sure you've got something left for the hill.
To run from the back of the last.
Yeah.
One of the big handicap gambles was Takao and the Boodles. What happened to Ruby?
It was all over before it started. From what I could see, a couple of false starts and he looked to completely have blown his chance. And that is the other remarkable thing about Constitution Hill. Like, he has it between his ears too. Takao didn't.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. All right. One word on the Ultima?
It was almost a carbon copy of the previous year. Cormac Rambler ridden from off the pace to pick up the pieces. Last year he sort of came weaved through horses. This year he stuck to the inside and waited for the gap to appear there. Very cool ride from Derek Fox. Clearly not an easy ride, Korak Rambler, but he rides him really well, and he's fine enough to go and win it up the hill. And Oscar Elite's run an identical race to the previous year as well, looming up there, having been off the pace, and almost certainly bursting a blood vessel again, as he's done in almost, you know, most of his races. So fair play to him for continuing to give his running in those sort of circumstances. But yeah, remarkably similar to last year. Just hark back to another one, listening too much to Lydia Hislop, you see. Mahler Mission, I don't think he would have won. Lydia's talking through her pocket in that one, isn't she?
Well, she did, didn't she?
Yeah. She was very keen each way on Mahler Mission. I've watched that several times. I thought he just got drawn into, you know, when he was in a winning position, he's kicked on a little too soon, and the distress signals just started to come out before
could
the last.
Be. I only watched it
once. I thought his stride was, you know, his jumping was really good, and I think his stride just started to go before the second last, where he came down. He was just getting tired, and, you know, it's a long way home from there. I think Patrick's ride would have won either way, and I think if he had got up and won by a head from Mahler Mission, then people would have said it was a great ride, whereas now they're saying he got lucky, which I don't think is the case at all.
As someone who's waiting on Gaia Domenico in a double, totally agree. Yeah, definitely would have won. Right, that is Tuesday wrapped up in a nice, neat little bundle. We are going to take the quickest of breaks, and we'll be back very shortly.
Betting can add a little excitement to any sporting event,
but only if it's done safely, responsibly, and within our means.
Never gamble when angry or feeling low.
Set yourself a limit for time, money, or both.
No matter what the problem is, gambling is never.
Is never.
It's never the answer.
There is always someone to talk to when you feel gambling is becoming a stress.
Check out responsiblegaming.paddypower.com.
And welcome back. Before we get stuck into Wednesday, a really good question from a viewer. He's emailed this in to fthm@paddypower.com. His name is Dave. And this one is to both of you. And this is a good question here. It says, have the fences been modified this year to be made softer? Because quite a few bad jumps, for example, Shishkin, Dino Blue, multiple times, didn't result in a fall when you might have expected them to. Ruby.
No, but what they have resulted in is both horses not winning the race. And I think that is an improvement in, obviously, with the awareness of horse welfare. And rather than horses falling, they're making mistakes that they're able to stand up from, but it's most definitely costing them races. And I think ultimately that's what you want.
I agree. But does that mean that they are
no,
softer?
No, I'd say the same as they were the last couple of years.
Yeah,
been a progression over a little bit of time. And so they're not as stiff. But I think that's an improvement, a subtle one, for the better.
Yeah, well, they moved that fence one coming down the hill or back up the hill anyway, a few years ago. Yeah. So they are going to make amendments based on falls. But great question, Dave, and well noticed. Right, Ballymore, Novice Hurdle, Perry Pass was not just on our previews, it would appear, on pretty much every preview, tipped up heavily. Ruby, you were a believer for a long time. Was he the best Novice Hurdler this week?
I'm biased, but Marine Nationale was equally as brilliant.
Yeah.
There's no doubt. Good choice from Paul Townend. Gallic Warrior was second. Cham Kiley is third. Could have ridden any one of the three. Nailed it on Imperial Pass. Settled, jumped, travelled, quickened. He was really good.
We know now, and again, it's well discussed, that Ballymore can often produce more champion hurdle horses than the Supreme. Do you see him as a potential two-miler in the future? Can he do it over a bit?
Yeah, I'd imagine that's where he'll go. And it'll be interesting to see which race he runs in at Punchestown. But I would imagine he will stay hurdling. I haven't spoken to Willie yet. I would say Willie Mullins, I'd be surprised if he's thought about it yet. But he loves to have a champion hurdle horse in the yard, and I'd be surprised if he doesn't give this horse a chance.
State man versus him versus Constitution Hill. But of course, he'll be in the Ascot Gold Cup anyway, so you don't have to worry about Constitution Hill. Rory, the Brown Advisory, the real whacker, he's one of the stories of the week. I suppose the UK, GB, you can take him. We'll give him to you, but
I think you have to give him.
Well,
yeah.
I suppose.
And don't say to you, you know.
Yeah, to them.
I'm like Pat
Neville. To them. But it was great to see. There's a couple of smaller yards at winners over the week, which is fantastic. Can you see him holding his own over Open Company next season?
Yeah, I'd be interested to see where they go with him trip-wise. He was just hanging on at the end, but then again, Jerry Colon was finishing with a real rattle once he hit the hill. He needed the hill. Whereas the real whacker, you know, he gains his ground and his position through his jumping, and that left him a little vulnerable. He's a bit of a brave man's game, really, in that regard. I know Pat Neville thinks he'd stay forever, and he may well do that. But yeah, given a good test of jumping, you know, his fencing is immaculate, And he's always going to hold his own because of that. I think he could drop back to be a Ryanair horse if they needed him to. But, you know, if he was mine at a small yard like that, I'd be dreaming of Gold Cup glory, certainly.
Nearly won the Gold Cup this year, so that.
I don't think they were that close to it. I think it just became an obsession with the media, really.
They wouldn't rule it out.
No, they didn't rule it out.
They could have ruled it out a few times.
He said he was getting 40 phone calls a day from various media sources asking if he was going to run the Gold Cup.
Okay.
So you know, you can see that it was a story, but it was a story that kind of was fueling itself.
Okay, the real whacker. We'll keep an eye out for him for the Gold Cup next year. Sir Gerhard Ruby, did the inexperience cost him?
I'd have to say even more than that. Jump cold early, never looked like getting involved.
Yeah, my assumption was that was inexperience to the jumping,
So you had loads of schooling done. You might have said it was inexperience jumping if you made a mistake when you got tight or whatever, but not over the first couple of fences. No, I'd say he was disappointing.
He did make significant mid-race progress. I was surprised he did. I thought when he lost his position early, that'll be it. He actually managed to get himself into it at some point. Then when the taps were turned on, he was, you know, the effort he had to make to get into it told on him.
I think disappointing.
What would you do with him now?
I don't know.
Back over hurdles?
I wouldn't think so, because if he's got hurdling probably next year, he won't be a novice after the turn of the year. So actually he is. He won in the Tyestes. No, he's not. He won at the end of January. If he won a week later. If he'd won a week later, he'd still be a novice until the Drinmore. So I'd imagine he'll run again over fences, and if he's doesn't cut it, he'd go back home.
I think you'd be inclined to give him try to find a slightly easier task for him to get his confidence, and then you can step him up again. You know, the obvious thing is to throw him in another grade one, but he's had a tough...
But there'd be no easy targets this time of year, Rory.
No, nothing easy.
There'll be winners of graded races, winners of twos, winners of one even. There won't be too many of them.
Dan Skelton says they're all easy over here. All these races over here. The Champion Chase, let's talk about
that. Ducking and diving,
huh? We didn't really get... For the second year in a row, Ruby, the Champion Chase, we built it up, the big three, and I'm kind of, again, it fell asunder.
Well, I was in the Edwardstone camp, and then the more it rained Wednesday morning, the more I was thinking, oh, my God, I'm on the wrong team here. But that said... Like, Edwardstone was beaten at the fifth fence.
Yeah.
Beaten, lights out. And Alan King says he mightn't run again this year. But, that can happen. But I suppose when you're billing a match, if one doesn't turn up, that's the result you get. And, like, to be fair to Energamine, he was really, really good. And Captain Guinness ran an incredible race. But you would expect Energamine to beat Captain Guinness the way Energamine beat Captain Guinness.
But even the big three, Editor Jeet didn't turn up at all either. He
just had a harder task. Not being handed an easy lead, and then obviously he got hampered on the home bend, and Paul picked up a ban for that, which I think was whether it was the right size, it was right that he got a ban for that.
I would agree. Yeah. He did come all the way in and come across, but whether it warranted 5 days, I thought it was pretty heavy ban for the interference that was caused.
What about the tactics that Paul employed? We were kind of talking a lot about whether he was going to hold him up, whether he was going to go up, and he seemed to ride a pretty perfect race, obviously.
Yeah, and he rode plenty of them last week. He rode them a bit differently, just rode them a bit closer, really. That was it.
And was that something that you think was decided beforehand, or is it one of those, see what happens?
I'd say Paul has made up his own mind. That's...
I spoke to Sean Graham, who I used to work with, and know Sean very well. He's the racing manager now for Tony Bloom. And I said, are you going to go forward? And he said, why would we do that? I was like, the race is off in 10 seconds, you know. I'm not going to be able to send a message to Tom Cannon. But they're very coy about it. And the point I made on the last podcast we did was, I think he wins if he goes forward, but I'm not sure if he's going to go forward, and I can't possibly back him at the... And, of course, they flip-flopped the morning of the race as well. Edwardstone was very strong.
Very
throughout
strong
the week before, and then, you know, on the day, well, the Bloom money came. They were hugely confident. And they did come up with a...
it was never confirmed that this is the £400,000 bet that was allegedly
£400,000 wouldn't even be a big bet for Tony Bloom.
I'll check my account, but I'm pretty sure it's not mine.
You get the money coming out from whatever Star Sports lay on the day. And obviously there's a close association between Tony and Star Sports, both Brighton-based and all the rest of it. But there was a suggestion that... part of the reason he didn't run to form in January in the Clarence House was because of the shoes he had on, and apparently there was a change of shoes after that.
And the white fences.
No, in fairness, I did mention the white fences. Nothing to do with the fences. But apparently, the shoes he wore for the first time in the Clarence House, Paul said he couldn't get any grip on them when they changed the shoes, and they were very happy with the shoes they had. I don't know. I expected that to come out in the post-race interview, but that would be an excuse.
Okay.
Showed you why he didn't jump the same way. But for me, he's a horse who jumps better when he's allowed to use his stride. You know, he's a big horse, and horses like that, if you try to sort of chop the stride a little bit, they are unlikely to jump as well. And when he was allowed to stride on, his jumping was very good, which it wasn't last time. And I thought he was in control of it very quickly. Yeah. By the third fence, I thought it was...
Do you think, we touched on El Fabiol, do you think he's much to worry about the novices next season? Andrew Green?
Yeah, well, listen... What an argument has to worry about is the fact that he will always have niggly problems, because he's, you know, big horses always have problems, and he'd be a 10-year-old. Yeah. And, you know, and the older you get and the more you've got a history of minor injuries, that is a concern in itself. So Father Time is his biggest problem. He's still very lightly raced, and he should be as good next year, but you don't set out at the start of the season worrying about that.
He's won two champion chases. Yeah. What's the one common denominator they both have?
Rain.
Soft. All morning.
All morning, rain, soft ground. If you're Paul Tennant and I'm Willie Mullins, Ruby, and I say you got to pick your champion chase horse today, El Fabiolo or Enner Gamin?
It's a simple answer. You say, you guarantee me which one's going to turn up.
That's the problem with conditional questions, isn't it?
No, it's not conditional. It's it one or t'other.
No.
There's no C option here. It's A or B.
The question starts with the word if. Okay. It's conditional.
Right. A or B, you ride El Fabiolo or Enner Gamin. You make the decision today, Ruby Walsh.
What's the ground like?
The ground is good to soft.
Oh, I knew you'd say that.
In quick round, I'd probably chance El Fabiolo.
Is that officially good to soft?
It's officially good to soft. I'm not giving you the penetronometer meeting and all that sort of nonsense. Right, move on to the bumper. Sort of got an answer from Ruby there. Pretty happy. Probably the story of the day, maybe. The Human Element with John Gleeson riding the bumper. And that was pretty nice, really, wasn't it?
Oh, great performance. But both Human Elements. It's John Kiley as well as John Gleeson. 85 years of age. You know, incredible from John Kiley. It just shows you the longevity that racehorse trainers can have, young and old. And he was a really good winner. I thought when the rain kept coming, more stamina, I thought it would really suit Factifile, who was second. I thought he'd turn that form from Leopardstown. But the winner's a hell of a good racehorse. And he more so than Constitution Hill. Of a future on the flat.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing. We talked, I know we kind of crabbed the anti-post pricing, but you look at Factifile the week before, 10 to 1, 12 to 1. He goes off, I don't know what his SP was, he was like 5 to 2 or something like that. So
he's not a favourite in the end, hasn't he?
Yeah, so you do get the other side of the coin.
Yeah, but then I'd said all the rest of Willie Twomper horses win the other way. Because Patrick opted for
that was
the assumption was it's for me was going to be Patrick's ride. So when he opted for Factifile, that probably displaced him as favourite and everything else drifted on the back of it.
He definitely went second favourite, then there was a good bit of money for Factifile on the day. Again, probably the rain. But, what would you... Like, the winner Dream to Share, he looks a proper animal. You say he could win races on the flat, but he's a serious novice hurdler.
Oh, he could be. There's no doubt he could be. He's a very, very good horse. 4 from 4 in bumpers. And looks the future is bright for him.
Yeah. Big time. Rory, the Dino Blue decided to try and take a bit of birch home with her. Didn't seem to
work out. Quite a lot of birch, sadly. And the one thing I was kicking myself about on day two was that I was with Jerry Colomb, Andy Post. I maintained that the only horse that could beat him was the Real Whacker. Real Whacker drifted a good price in that as well. He was weak in the betting in the morning. And I've done him in an each way double with a couple, including Dino Blue. And I realised, after he's won, I thought, why have I not done a single, for goodness sake? So I needed Dino Blue for a good return, and I ended up, getting a small win with a win in two places. But, yeah, she ran a cracking race, and she's a brave jumper. She's obviously inclined to make a mistake as a raw novice, but she ran a cracking race there. But the mistakes she made at the last two were absolute howlers. How she stayed in her feet is beyond me, but how she stayed in her feet and still finished second was remarkable. And she's... She still has a pretty bright future, I would say. And, we'll talk about anti-post stuff later on. Mm. But I thought she was quite a big price for the mare's chase.
Okay. Next season.
Yeah. Right. I mean, maybe 2.5 miles is maybe she's always going to want 2 miles. But, her jumping will get better. I mean, she likes jumping. She enjoys it. She's just sometimes a little bit too brave at her fences. And she's misjudged those two. But it didn't stop her desire to go and win. And she was just blindsided by Henry's horse on the
Mascada, yeah, came from nowhere. Ruby, I suppose Constitution Hill State Man forecast was heavily tipped up. So was the Delta work, Galvin. Well, that couldn't have worked out any better. It was
no,
it scripted.
Couldn't. And again, the weather, PK. Rain came, suited Delta work a lot better than Galvin, and they were the two best horses in the race, and they pulled well clear of Franco de Porto.
I was going to say, what was the thoughts in the camp on Franco de Porto's run?
Ran a blinder.
Yeah.
Ran a blinder, but just, yeah.
Would he go to the second best horse, beat the third best horse?
He's going to the Grand Street to Parry, I think.
Okay. He's been to Auteuil a few times, hasn't he?
He was turned it last year, yeah.
Okay, very good. So, but yeah, worked to plan the cross country. Right, anything more on Wednesday or we crack on to Thursday?
I'd say Thursday.
Crack on to Thursday, this is Ruby Walsh. The Turner's Novice Chase produced one of the surprises of the week in Stage Star Making Most. Good ride from Harry Cobden, this one, Rory, I thought, anyway.
Yeah, the first two were first and second through, right? It was a strange race to watch because there didn't seem to be any semblance of mistake from anything. For most of the race, and they were in almost identical order. So it's lined up, and Harry has dictated the speed they were going to go at, and everyone seems to have been happy to be pulled along by that. And I think he's managed to slow it down a little bit to the point where he completely controlled it. And I think one or two jockeys might want to have that race again.
Really?
But yeah, it was an exceptionally good ride. The runner-up was a 40-1 shot. Laura Morgan really knows what she's doing. He's run a cracker. He's actually led briefly, hasn't he, over the second last, and then Stage Star has fought back. But yeah, that was one of the rides of the week, and it probably doesn't get the credit it deserves because it's a guy going out and making most of the running and then winning, and it looks fairly straightforward. But to make it look straightforward, you've got to do everything right. Mighty Porter was interesting in there in that he got above himself last year. You know, he blew his race in the Supreme before the race in the paddock and going to post. He was incredibly, almost too quiet this time around. It seemed to me that Connections had worked really hard to make sure that he didn't boil over, didn't look vaguely boiling over. He was the calmest horse of the entire week I saw. Maybe he was too switched off. And when push came to shove and he needed to make a forward move, it took him a while to pick up. And then he has, and I know people have crabbed the way he went sort of right-handed from the last fence, but that's not unusual for Mighty Potter anyway. No. I don't think it was specifically a course issue. I think there are other courses that will suit him better than Cheltenham. But I think he needed to be racing a little earlier than he was, and I think he was sort of drawn into everything. Everything seemed to be going to plan for everything in the race. Everyone was sitting there going, well, I'm going well here, jumping well, things are looking good. But it was Harry Cobden who was controlling that.
Do you believe the result of the Turners, Ruby? Do you think that'll stand the test of time?
The Stage Star has kept improving. There's no doubt about that. From winning the novice handicap at Cheltenham, he's kept improving. He was last year's Challow winner, so the back form is there. He's jumped better as the year has gone on too. He's started to get through the air much quicker. Yeah. I thought he was a bit careful and high early in the season. But
I saw him at Warwick and he was disappointing.
A bit ponderous at Warwick, but he's definitely gotten better at it. But I agree with Rory. I thought he got a really good ride from Harry Cobb in the front. He dictated it and that was the winning of it.
Okay, the two of them meet in optimal conditions. I say the two of them, Mighty Potter and Stage Star. Who wins on Ruby?
Where?
Cheltenham, next season.
Going.
Good soft.
It
rained a bit in the morning, but not that much.
In what race?
Let's go with the Ryanair.
Couldn't see either of them winning.
Oh, Ruby. They're the only two runners in a race put up for them against each other. You have to pick
PK,
one.
Just stop asking me really annoying hypothetical questions.
Ruby's in great form.
I don't care which one of them
Ruby's
wins.
Ruby's in
match.
Great form. Whose idea was this?
5-6 each of two. Yeah. Come on, tell me something relevant.
I think Mighty Potter is the better of the pair in terms of his peak, but he needs to be able to show he can do that next time. I suspect, given what he did between Cheltenham and Punchestown last year, I think he will bounce back and put up a very good performance. Stage Star is always going to be able to handle good ground better than Mighty Potter. The deeper it gets for Mighty Potter, the happier he is, the more of a test of stamina it is. It's one of those things. You throw the right conditions at one of them and they'll come through and... Similarly.
Thank you, Rory. Thank you. Tea or coffee later, Ruby? Are you going to make a decision on that now? Or we...
Come on, it'll be 4 o'clock.
You're not going to get that hug now, you know
that. Definitely not. I'm never getting that hug. The Ryanair Chase and the Paddy Power Stayers Hurdle both producing relatively surprising results, particularly the Paddy Power Stayers. Envoy Allen, Ruby, is he back or is he...
If you gave me 30 free bets in Cheltenham, there's no way I'd have backed Envoy Allen.
I actually did back him.
Did you?
If you asked me the week before, not on my mind at all, but watching Captain Guinness in the parade ring made me think, Henry's horses are absolutely running out of their skin, aren't they? And I looked at the race and go, well, I didn't really want to back anything each way because none of them convinced me. And suddenly there was a reason to back him.
Yeah.
So I backed him each way, and that was the first clever thing I did all week, to be perfectly honest.
Skin like otters, did they?
Skin like otters.
That was what
I actually thought the very same as you after Captain Guinness, but I was still thinking he's been running well, Captain Guinness.
Yes.
Like this pulled up in the King George and was beaten before I got to halfway. I couldn't have had him. It completely stumped me. I did think watching Shishkin though, even lining up, going out in the track, he didn't want to go. Nicky's blaming the tongue tight. Perhaps it was on too tight. That could have that effect if someone put it on too tight. But to me, he looked like he wanted head gear.
Yeah,
he was only half interested, half jumping, half going. That's what I thought.
I think it sheds a lot of light on what happened last year. I don't really buy this whole bone scan issue last year in the championships. He just was not on a going day,
just
going to the first fence.
I was disappointed with him. I was like, how can you not line up like he did, not go to the first fence like he did, make the mistakes he made, and still getting involved. Yeah. Like he has some unnatural ability, Shishkin. Incredible amount of natural ability. But mentally wise, to me, he needs a bit of help.
Will 3 miles help? Because they're talking about the Betway Bowl, aren't they?
Maybe, Patriot. And they're taking the tongue tie off, but to me, a pair of cheek pieces or a pair of blinkers or something and make him concentrate.
Okay, make him concentrate.
But yeah, I mean, 3 miles. So the one thing about him going up to 3 miles is your concern with most brilliant horses is that they'll over-race and they won't get home. Whereas he's never going to over-race, is he? So that's
like
the one thing you have is he's got the natural ability. He can not go a yard for a circuit over 3 miles and then decide at some stage he's going to race and he'll win good races over that trip. So, I wouldn't be at all surprised to see them go that way. And maybe think about the Gold Cup next season. But, I think they're going to think about Gold Cup. Maybe this year was the year to bite the bullet.
Might have been. He did say it.
Yeah. He did. He did talk about it.
Constitution Hill v Shishkin in the Gold Cup next season. That could be interesting.
Take your pick there.
Yeah. Ruby, if you were to pick one of those two. All right, let's talk about the Paddy Power Stayers Hurdle. Fair play if anyone found sorry to Burleigh. Yeah, we know he loves Cheltenham, Ruby. But where did this come from?
I don't know again. And Homeway the League got an absolute flyer and injected a huge amount of pace into it because Florian Porter and Dashiell Dasher then had to chase him. And after jumping 3 hurdles, you were thinking, watching it live and thinking, Paisley Park could win this.
Yeah.
The gallop they were going. It was going to be end to end. And it suited a real stare. And that was Sire de Burleigh. Now, my immediate thought watching it live was Paisley Park. And when I saw him hitting a flat spot best part of a mile to run.
You like to see him in the fast.
I was thinking, happy days, this is all going to go Paisley Park's way. But then it was won by the stayer who was much closer to the front end.
Yeah.
And that was Sarah de Burleigh. Brilliant ride for Mark Walsh, back from broken vertebrae. And that's producer Mark that's wrecking the shop in the background. He's been so good all series. Now look what's happening. But I thought, was it won by a pure stayer?
Okay, it's a funny result. I talk about believing results. Surely he goes off 10-1 at Aintree in the same race, or
he made a mistake. I don't know what the fourth last maybe, and I thought that'll knock him out because he's off the bridle anyway, trying to keep up with him. Maybe it helped him. Maybe it helped him just to get a breath.
It did. I definitely think that the pace, the endless pace, helped him. A brilliant run by Dashiell Dasher. I didn't see that coming.
He's the most likable horse in training in the UK.
I know.
The first race you didn't back him or tip him up for the season.
But ultimately, they weren't first and second because Dashiell Dasher was demoted. But I gave you that forecast already. How many goals did you want to pick up?
I know someone who did get I know someone actually got the amended forecast.
Oh, you'd be pretty good at if you had
the Irish Daily Star team.
Did you agree with the demotion, Ruby?
I can see how it happened. I think technically, if you read the rules, Dashiell Dasher does drift and move Tihupu off a line, off a considerable line. I did think Tihupu had loads of time to get back past him. I could see that boat was. Yeah. I wasn't surprised.
I was pretty sure they would change it, which is sad because I think connections of Tihupu wouldn't have cared if he was promoted to second or finished third, whereas for Dashiell Dasher and his connections, finishing second would have meant a hell of a lot.
But Joe Mander had the forecast on.
And
exactly,
also it sets the precedent for when that does happen between first and second.
It's always if you're lunging late, if you're getting up a stride past the line, you're always going to get those stewards' inquiries. And if you don't appear to be getting up, then you can be murdered and not get it.
Yeah, there was footage, by the way, on ITV of the stewards' inquiry, or at least the interviews with Davy Russell, And it was Rex Tingle, not Rex Tingle. Who rode
Rex Tingle.
It was Rex Tingle, yeah, on Dastard Rasher. But Ruby, you were quite keen to get the cameras to continue to roll while the stewards are deliberating, and the steward came out and said, no chance.
No chance. Yeah. Courtroom. Court of law, is that what he said?
Yeah,
I really, I couldn't stop laughing. I was sitting in the hub thinking, my God, did he just compare his children to a courtroom?
Yeah.
The court of law, actually. But look, you watched the Den all weekend. You watched the French-Wales game.
Yes.
And you had Joy Neville sitting in the TMO relaying the information as to why there was decisions. You watched the red cards in the Ireland game. Referee, TMO, linesman, A, B, C, D equals F, decision made. I just can't understand why racing's not doing the same.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. And I understand why historically they're not keen to do that, because I don't think you'll get this. You see this done in other sports, and it's all
people relatively could argue a bit consistent. Far.
It's consistent, but it also makes sense that people are asking the right questions and they're able to answer those questions according to the rules. The way the rules are written for the stewards is just an absolute nonsense, in my view. The guidance, particularly, the rules as they're set out are fair enough. Listen, I think you could challenge them and say, I disagree with a couple of things there. The guidance to the stewards is just shocking, and it needs to be thrown in the bin. And I
don't mean that for every inquiry, PK. You're having a running and riding inquiry that has no result or no bearing on the result, by all means, behind closed doors. You're having one now that could involve the whip as regards numbers. So you've gone over their actual allotted number. So you count them out. There is 10. Sorry, you've been demoted. Now, you get to the technical aspects that they're going to do maybe next week as to someone's hand too high or hitting a horse in the wrong place. That has no bearing on the result. Fine, closed doors. But the ones that have bearing on the results, play them out so we can all sit, watch and understand why. Now, I know Sean Parker came out and then delivered that information 20 minutes later. But that would have been engaging, entertaining.
Oh, it would have been. And informative.
Very informative.
Yeah. Right, we'll move on to the Friday. The Triumph Hurdle. I think William Mullen's got a good bunch of juveniles, Ruby.
Yeah, and which ones do you take out of it? The filly was very good, lost him out. Blood Destiny, a bit like Takao. He lost it on the way to the start. The race was over for him.
Could you see that on the way down?
You could see it in some different cameras. He got very warm, very revved up, very buzzy. But you have to be able to take the occasion. He didn't. I thought Lost Him Out was a very good winner. I thought Zenta was probably one to take out of
it.
She jumped forward hugely from Fairy House, and Gallimarsau finished well.
Yeah.
Or not too bad. I guess the question is always, right, Lost Him Out, what does she do next season? You were at pains to tell everyone, 4-year-olds to 5-year-olds, they struggle. It's tough. Is there anything in her that she could be different?
No, there's not. And only time will tell. And it pans out roughly one every 10, 11 years. A 4-year-old crop up and win a champion hurdle. Espoir Dallin is not that long ago. Now, maybe she will. I personally don't see it. I think that those four horses are facing into what next year?
Yeah. Well, she go to the mares then, really.
She can go to the mares.
But even that's quite a tough.
That's even quite tough. It is the hardness for Triumph horses next year.
We'll find out.
And again, you're talking about every... it takes maybe once a decade or once a bit longer than that, you get one that can come through and do it. But even then, you look at Espoir Dallin and you look at Catch It, neither of those would have particularly appealed as the horses to buck the trend the following season. It's just the way the
race has transpired. Yeah. Yeah.
She still needs to learn to race a bit, though, doesn't she? She was very keen.
I thought she did. Given you had the issue with the false start and the fact that a lot of them are very keen, and she was keen herself, the fact that she saw it out so well.
But it was a very slowly run race.
Yes.
Just some of the sectionals I've been reading, they finish very strong in the Triumph, yes, which wouldn't be traditional either.
Okay. We move on to the Gold Cup, the feature of the week for many. God, he's very good, that Galvin Sean Ruby. And he stayed. He definitely stayed.
He was brilliant. But I thought, as a race, on a whole, PK to watch, it is the Gold Cup. It should be entertaining. It should be a brilliant race. I thought it had everything. Like, from the word go, you had Statler struggling, then Manila Indo struggling. So you're thinking, these are going hard. He had a high senior on the front end, Brave Man's Game in a lovely position, protect that up there on the inside. Hewick, the outsider, taking them on. Yep. You're looking at that Plutar and Gallop and Sham, thinking, are they too far back? Are they close enough? And it had everything. I thought from the top of the hill down, Jordan Gainford, Harry Skelton, Harry Cobden, Sam Ewing, Paul Townend, I thought the riding was top class.
Yeah.
I thought the race had everything. And then it had the King George winner, leading to the second last, being challenged by the Paddy Power Irish Gold Cup winner, and away they went, and you ended up with a brilliant winner. Like, to me, if you were to write what I believed and dreamt and hoped Gold Cups would be, you wrote this race.
He nicely summed up, Ruby. He didn't have it perfect, I think it's fair to say. There was obviously not the
fault. But you shouldn't.
Yeah.
You shouldn't. And that was the brilliance of it. You shouldn't have it perfect. Like, a couple of novice jumps, he got a bit behind the bridle, and then you have to, like Paul Townend, like, almost playing the hand he's dealt.
Yeah.
And having the composure to do that from so far out, to never panic. Great jump six out, misses the fifth last. You're thinking, Jesus, is he going to get into this race or not? Harry Cobden to lock them up down the outside, away from the third last, down to the bend. He's judging it off Harry Skelton, and he's keeping it tight. Paul is tucked in behind him. I just thought it was magical to watch.
It really was. Now we talk about the future. He's seven. Same year, same age as Coto Star was when he won his first, but Coto Star was obviously racing in France at a young age. 13 races, Galopin de Chamsat versus 21 for Coto. So, 3 Gold Cups, easy peasy.
I don't know. Look, obviously, you'd be hoping he'll go back to Punchestown. But next year could be different for him because the John Durkin has moved now to Morgiana weekend. So, rather than start in early in December, there is the opportunity for him to start 2.5 miles now in mid-November. Does that mean we will all get to see him in the Savills at Christmas? There's a chance it could. And then you could see him in the Paddy Power Irish Gold Cup, and then you could see him in the Cheltenham Gold Cup, and hopefully back in Cheltenham. So the moving, the strategic movement of the John Durkin next winter, but when he comes into play next year, that could give us all the chance to see him one more time. And that, to me, is progress and race planning and race structure.
Yeah.
Best since Coto Star, staying chaser?
Ratings say that. He could be. Like, and he looks to me like he could be. Yeah, he's a brilliant racehorse. Best since Coto Star. Who knows? He's in a different generation. Coto Star won at Tingle Creek. Could you ever won 2 Tingle Creeks?
Yeah.
Could you ever see Galopin de Chamsat winning at Tingle Creek?
Last season, I mean, I know he's a novice last year, but he had that pace, didn't he? Which seems to
he had that
now
pace against 2.5 mile horses.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
He never dropped them back to 2 miles. But look, he is the out and out staying chaser who looks like he gallops forever. And I just hope he's, like Constitution Hill, is lucky enough to stay sound enough that he can entertain us all for years.
Fantastic. Brave Man's Game, Rory ran an absolute belter. Are there conditions where he can reverse the form? Can you see them?
Yeah. The margins are so tight that yes. Just because horse A beats horse B in a championship race doesn't mean horse A will always beat horse B, because we've seen every year we see these horses run below form for whatever reason, and then it's a case of can they bounce back to their best. And there's always a chance, particularly at the top level where the margins, as I said, the margins are so fine. These horses are running right to their limit, and it doesn't take an awful lot to go wrong in terms of their preparation or their well-being or a mistake or two in a race to change things. So, yeah, I would say you keep running that race and Galopin de Chamsat wins it most of the time, but, you know, the mistake he made, what was it, 5?
Yeah,
you know,
and then
it doesn't have to be much worse for him to be right out of the race. He made a couple of mistakes early. You know, if things don't go for him early in the race, he doesn't get into the position he was, and he loses it. If things go better for him, then he arrives there hard on the bridle with 2 to jump, and he wins by 20 lengths. So, you know, it's easy to see things turned around. He is clearly at that trip, now that stamina is completely proven now with him. He's clearly a better horse at his peak in that kind of race than Brave Man's Game. But Brave Man's Game has run, it surprised me because he was so good so early that I thought he basically was like this, he plateaued and he was going to run to the same sort of level throughout his career, and he was so professional that he'd win big races but he wouldn't improve. He's improved in his last 2 starts.
It didn't surprise me listening to Paul Nicholls and looking at Paul Nicholls' body language. It didn't surprise me that Brave Man's Game ran the race he ran. But then to go back to your saying horse A beating horse B, if Paul Townend is the other side of Rachel Blackmore, Brave Man's Game's your Gold Cup winner. Because he gets brought down to the top of the hill, not Rachel Blackmore. So when you're riding horses that way, you need that little bit of luck. So hoisting your falls brings down Sounds Russian and badly interferes with that Plutar. They're the other side. Those two horses are swapped the other way around. And it's Paul Townend.
Yeah, if you're racing where Paul Townend was, you can't pick where you go to avoid fallers in front of you. You're, you know, by the time you see it, there's no way you can move out of the way.
Well, the person beside you is not getting out of the way. I'd let you buy
No,
you're
quite right.
You did tip up Hoisinor. He was going. He's going nicely.
I thought he was going. I mean, where he would have finished, he would have needed to have improved. But the whole point about putting him up there was, throughout his career, he's given the impression, if he can just get in a rhythm in his races, he's capable of actually taking his form up by a stone or more. And he seemed to be in the process of doing that. He fell too far out to know where he would have finished, but he had plenty off the bridle at the time. And, of course, we know that he's beaten Brave Man's Game in the spring the last two seasons. So if you take a line through him and say, Hoisinor would have potentially should have finished in front of him, then he's a big player in the race. There's too many ifs in that to be forming any conclusions. But I was very happy having backed him at 25-1. 25-1 the day before, big prize.
He was a huge contributor to the Gold Cup, though.
He was, yes.
Massive. Yeah.
Small consolation to connections, I'm sure.
No consolation to connections.
No, yeah.
And in fairness,
but huge for all of us.
When he came down, was the first twig he touched the whole way around. You know, he was awkward once or twice, you know, just getting his landing gear in the right place. But he hadn't actually made any semblance of a mistake, just getting too tight and over-rotated a little bit. And that was that. It would have been interesting if he'd stayed up to see how he would have featured in the finish. But as Ruby says, he helped make the Gold Cup by being a horse good enough to win it and going to the front and setting that pace. No one could ignore him. They had to stay with him, and that made the race as good as it was.
Test that it was. Another horse who came down was Hewick. Thankfully, he's okay, which was great to see. Our cameras were following Shark Hanlon and the team as part of the Shark Power series. Remember, subscribe to the Paddy Power Racing YouTube channel and you'll get all the reaction to that. Doesn't look like he's going to go to the Grand National now. Looks like he's going to wait for Punchestown, which is an interesting call.
Yeah, it was a nasty fall, and I think
I thought the worst.
Well, I was just it was one of those you were glad to see him on his feet very quickly after that. But clearly he'll take a bit of time to recover, and the extra time between Cheltenham and Punchestown, I think, is the deciding factor there. But you know, there still is time between now and Aintree. Although the Shark has kind of said he won't be going there now, he's not taking him out of the race. And if he happens to, you know, when they've given him a bit of a break and give him a canter, and he thinks, like, he's in terrific form, he might find himself back in that race. You never know until they're taken out.
You never know.
He might look at the prize money again and go, hang on a second. Oh, yeah, hang on. Ruby, Noble Yates, who you tipped up a long, long way back on Road to Cheltenham at 66-1. He unbelievably finished for fourth when he was miles out the back. I stopped watching. Did you get four places, Andy Post?
No, I wouldn't have thought so.
I thought so. He hasn't even checked. Good for him, eh?
But he looked too slow.
Yeah. Was that... He hasn't always looked too slow, is it?
He hasn't gone that pace.
No.
That's the whole thing.
To me, we've had a couple of stop startish Gold Cups, but I know from riding in them, one or two of them, like, that it's just, that's what a Gold Cup was the other day. Just that jump out, go, and they fall off the back.
Yeah.
Rather than horses getting involved.
How many times have you watched it? The way you're talking about it suggests that before you go to bed every
this
night.
This Gold Cup?
Yeah.
I only watched it once.
Really?
Some races are just indelibly edged in their use. Everything that happens for a reason, and you can see why. And
they're the best horses, to me, in the PK. They're the horses you know the most about, the most familiar. You're not thinking, what was that? You just know what they were. You know what they were. It just, yeah.
Was the Grand National winner in that race? Or did he run at Cheltenham?
Possibly. I mean, Cormac Rambler's Grand National favourite now, and he ran a perfectly good trial, either Galvin or Delta Work. The cross country is still the best race to prep a horse for the Grand National. It keeps him nice and sweet. It isn't because of the nature of the cross country course. It's not as demanding physically as a Gold Cup. And Gordon worked this out a long time ago that it just puts horses in the right place for the National. So you know, either Galvin or Delta Work would be very interesting in entry as well.
I wouldn't be looking at the National winner is a former Cheltenham winner, but he didn't run there this year.
Reveal all, please.
Vanillier.
Vanillier for the Grand Nationals at Ruby Walsh. Ruby, Corbett's Cross, you gave him some pretty glowing recommendations.
And I still think he is. I still think he's a Gold Cup horse. But again, in the preliminaries, you could see him going to post. He was a way more revved up horse than he was on any of his previous starts. He raced too keen throughout the race and his chance was gone before he ducked out at the last. He was starting to fold and starting to fade. He'd gone backwards from being in front. And I still think he's a horse with a huge, huge future. But I was impressed with Stay Away Faye, I must say that.
Yeah.
Had impressed me first time at Newbury. I kind of looked over his Doncaster run But it kept going well. Strong's there.
Yeah.
Never stay away, Faye. The Hunter Chase. Yep, we're allowed to call it that. The Hunter Chase. 66-1 Rory, but a proper Hunter Chaser won it.
Yeah, and it's good to see. I was just looking at his overall record. He came out of Irish points, had three runs in Irish points, finished no closer than fifth. And then he had a few starts for Bradley Gibbs. It cost $5,000. Jimmy Kelly sourced him $5,000 from that. And then in his first few points in the UK, he won a week, made an open narrowly. Pulled up a couple of times, and then from the following season, he finished third to Vosselet at Stratford in the Champion Novices, and then his record in points from then on was almost perfect. He was fancied last year when he came along, and Bradley Gibbs held his hands up and said, "I rode him wrong. I rode him up the inside for luck, and the horse got, you know, he got tight for room. He got a bit of stage fright and didn't give his running. And this year he's learned his lesson, kept him wide." Just let the horse enjoy himself, and he did. He jumped well, he enjoyed himself, he kept out of trouble, and he found just enough to hold on in what was one of the most exciting finishes of the festival, to be perfectly honest. Not because they were absolutely flying from behind, everything
was stopping.
Yeah. And it was just one of those, when's it going to finish? You had so much more time to enjoy the run-in in the Fox Hunter. But yeah, it's great to see grassroots coming to the fore there. But that's both Irish grassroots and British grassroots, and someone like Bradley Gibbs to come through. You know, he was one of the leading, probably the leading point-to-point rider in Wales. He's uprooted himself and moved to Hertfordshire, where he's training. He's got a very good record in point-to-points, but he's a small yard, doesn't pay much money for his horses, just works really hard at it. And, you know, the horse is owned by his future father-in-law. Just a great story, you know. And that's, Cheltenham should be about grassroots racing. And in the Fox Hunter, they still have that look at grassroots, and that's
St.
a really good thing.
Place Festival, Hunter Chase. St. James Palace? St. James Place? Right, yeah, yeah. Bradley Gibbs, B. Gibbs. He's not in the Bee Gees, though. Like, I mean, he really should be. The Paddy Power Mares, or Mrs. Paddy Power Mares Chase, once again, an absolute cracker.
That would work better if his name was Gibb, obviously.
Gibb.
Mares Chase was a cracker,
that
yes.
was it. For the second yes. year in a row, Ruby, and again, it's JP.
I think for the third year, PK.
Was it?
There's only been three of them. Carl Reevey beat Ellie Mae, a cracking finish. Ellie Mae last year, getting up to beat Scarlet and Dove, and then this year you had Impervious and Allegory Devassi. I think it's been a great addition myself. Really competitive, and it was take your pick, wasn't it? Impervious or Allegory Devassi, and that's the way they went to the last fence. So, look, I was delighted for Brian Hayes. He thought he gave Impervious a really good ride. Allegory Devassi just didn't get home as well as Impervious. Impervious is tougher, more resolute, and the best mare on the day won the race.
Simple as that. And finally, in the Martin Pipe, which concluded the festival on our podcast, you said, when you went over to Cheltenham, Rory, everyone was tipping up a Rocco, so I assume you backed it.
I didn't know. I went for Gordon's in the end. I can't be backing horses that 12 people have told me, haha, I've heard this is going to win. That you can guarantee I'm never going to back those. Although he was actually a backup. I thought he'd be a favourite in the day. You couldn't meet people who thought, nearly everyone I spoke to, oh, I've heard about one on the final. Oh, have you now? It's not a Roka, is it? And then we go, how'd you know that? it's absolutely. I heard a great story on Shane on the way down about Sam. Somebody whose father lives next to the yard and had got a bit of inside info on him. It's just everybody had a story and everybody had this, I've got a hot one for the Friday.
The only one I got was Seddon.
Well, that's all right.
That's okay. Jeez, that was a hell of a result.
They were
the first one
they?
I got, Seddon, yeah.
Okay, yeah. The first one, the one that won. Right, we're going to wrap up. That was a great look back. We're going to look forward now, lads. Ruby, because you don't read the running orders, I'm going to give you a little bit more time. Want two horses each. For next year's Cheltenham Festival, obviously grade ones are priced up, so off you go. We're going to have a nice little lucky 15.
Constitution Hill and Galloping the Champ.
which races, Ruby?
Champion Hurling Gold Cup.
Thank you very much.
I see someone has not to knock anyone at all, but someone's been asked to put their lucky 15 up for next season, and they do indeed have Constitution Hill and Galloping the Champ.
They're probably decent prices. Off you go. Okay, Rory, add two.
That decent. Well, you didn't let me talk about her there, but Impervious is a horse I definitely want to, not necessarily for the Mares Chase, Ryanair.
Oh, okay.
She's good.
Why would she go Ryanair when she's got the Mares Chase?
Well, because sometimes you got to go for legacy, don't you? I think she's even better than what we've seen so far. Her form is working out really well. My God, she was tough from the last fence. She didn't. She met her on the wrong stride, but she was clever. Allegory Devassi got the jump and got away, But it didn't take her long to get back on terms in a way again. It wasn't because Allegory Debassi was weakening either. I thought she was really strong from the last, and she is a mare with a big, big future, particularly on soft ground.
Okay.
And it probably wasn't soft enough for her in the day.
She could have the rating by then, and she'll have a £7 allowance.
Okay,
yeah.
So Impervious, Galvan-Sham, Constitution Hill. What's the fourth one for the 15?
I couldn't work out, or maybe I've missed something here. Blazing Cal is in the betting for several races next year, but the biggest price he is for the Stayers Hurdle. I don't think he jumps the fence. I think he's.
Could you have him on as fragile as that?
Well, it depends what price it is. He's 33-1 for the Stayers. Given he was, you know, off a bad preparation, he was 3-1 for this year's Stayers.
This 15 is no good if he doesn't turn up.
Well, it's no good if Constitution Hill might not turn up.
Got a better record of turning up, I suppose.
But then he might turn up in the wrong race, and you don't get any money for that either.
Do you?
So 33-1 Blazing Cal for the Stairs. Or listen, if he was 8-1, I'd be leaving him alone. But
Rory's ruined the lucky 15.
Well, if he wins
I don't know what Charles Burgess' idea is, but for me, Blazing Cal, given the issues he has, he should never jump a fence. And of course, he's now had an extra season over hurdles anyway. So once you put them to fences a year later, you're less likely to get returns on it. So for me, he has to stay hurdling, and the only risk he can run is the Stairs Hurdle, and 33-1 is too big a price for that.
Well, having backed him at 9-4 last week, probably leave him alone at 33. Maybe I should
have. Have you put a year on that?
358 days to go, I believe.
Until, no, but if you write Blazing Cal, Stairs Hurdle, just pop in and say, not this year, staying hurdle.
Not this year, the Stairs, the Paddy Power Stairs Hurdle, of course. Yeah, 358 days to go as we record till the 2024 festival, the Chatham Festival. We'll be starting the Cheltenham Countdowns next week, no doubt. Big thank you to Rob Catterson for the entire series. He's done a huge amount of work behind the scenes. Thanks to producer Mark as well. And, of course, you two fellas. There's plenty more to come, though. Do check out the Paddy Power Racing YouTube channel. We mentioned Shark Power. We're also going to have a rewind show with Joseph Bryan for the real festival.
Before you go.
In March. Before you haven't finished.
How'd you highlight?
Had I highlight?
Of all these shows, how'd you highlight?
Of all these shows, a highlight of actually what happened on the show. Clearly, Ruby, it's our one-to-one reactions when you never answer my questions. That's my highlight.
Potentially, do you a highlight, Rory?
My highlight was going to be, because Nina said there's a hug in him, you two having a hug at the end of this. But I think you've blown your chances now.
That's very unscripted now. So, I don't think I could ever hug Ruby Walsh at this stage, given he won't answer any question I ask. Ruby, if you want to hug, we'll have a chat with it afterwards.
Do it off camera.
That's one for the X-rated scenes.
We'll just keep the volume on.
Exactly.
Mine was definitely telling director Rob when we walked in to do the preview in the hotel in Dublin, and the whole thing was straw.
He told me that.
Tell him I had a hay fever. And his face and the whole place. That was definitely my highlight.
To confirm, you don't have hay fever. Just in case the joke is lost, Ruby Walsh does not have hay fever. Fran Berry, though, does suffer a bit from it. So if you ever want a joke there, well, next one. Fridays with Fran, we'll have the studio made with straw. You've knocked me off my stride there, Ruby. Paddy Power Racing YouTube. Shark Power also.
Straight back onto it. So you couldn't knock you off your stride.
Yeah, I know. Well, sure. Look, it's like Constitution Hill. We do have the big festival in March, the Dubai World Cup, and we're going to have a Joseph O'Brien rewind show. Ruby Walsh, I can exclusively reveal you're going to be going to Medan.
I'm going to Medan, yeah.
Ruby said after that Gold Cup summer, there's the Dubai Gold Cup as well.
World Cup.
Gold Cup as well. Yeah, it's the Stairs race. If you'd like a little, I'll tell you what, Ruby. Before you go to Maidan, I'll give you a little bit of
I'm not interested in that one.
I'll give you a little bit of help. I'll charge you too. We will, of course,
that
have.
It wasn't always called the Gold Cup, though, was it?
The longer race. Somewhere. No, yeah, it's always.
It has been for a certain name.
We'll take this
while,
off air. We'll hug over it. We're going to have Fridays with Fran a little bit earlier this week. We're recording on Wednesday, looking ahead to Dundalk on Friday. We might actually ask him about a few of those Maidan races. And I'll tell you what, Ruby, I'll send it on to you so you can plagiarise all those thoughts on racing TV.
I can just ask him when I'm there. He's there as well.
And seeing as you're in Dubai, we won't see you this weekend for From the Horse's Mouth, but hopefully we'll have you, Rory, as we look ahead to Newbury and the return of the Irish flat season as well. Yes. Listen, thanks a million to everyone I mentioned, particularly Rob Catterson, producer Mark, Ruby, Rory and Rob and the rest of the team. Until next time. Champion.